What's going on, guys? Welcome to Dime Dropper Playoff Previews. Now, if you remember, every single year I try to do this where I have a content creator from each side of the series and hopefully do it for as many series as I can. So for this one, we're going to start out with the number three seed in the East, Milwaukee Bucks, and the number six seed in Indiana Pacers. And joining me, I'm so thankful that these two have joined me. We have Camille, the host, one of our newer hosts of the Locked On Network for Locked On Bucks, and straight Milwaukee or Wisconsin, you know, native fan, which I love. And then Ben, who has Indiana roots. You might recognize him from the vlog when we played the Pacers just a couple weeks back, representing the Pacers. I just want to say, Camille, first off, thank you so much for joining me and representing those Bucks.
Got to. You got to put on for the 414. It was just 414 day here in Milwaukee every April 14th. Now we try to turn up a little bit. 414 is the area code. So the vibes are good right now, even though we have questions around Giannis, which are the biggest questions.
Right. We're getting into all of that. But Ben, representing Indiana, how you feeling?
I'm feeling all right. I'm excited that the Pacers are back in the playoffs. It's been a minute since we've been relevant like this and, you know, had some attention. So it's nice. I'm excited, nervously excited, but you know.
So before we get into the actual series, I want to definitely talk about the seasons that you guys have had, starting with Milwaukee, because they're the team that's going to have more pressure on them and more eyeballs on them. It's been a 9-win drop-off this season. And the headlining move that everybody was talking about is that Damian Lillard finally got a change of scenery coming from Portland after 11 seasons, not in Milwaukee. How do you guys think, or how do you think Damian Lillard has done this season, how he's been received? It's definitely been a statistically tougher year for him, but you would have expected that being a second option. But there's definitely been some rough performances. What's been the opinion of Dame's first season as a Buck?
Yeah, it hasn't gone as smoothly as some people initially thought. I mean, when the trade happened, the very first thing that I was thinking about, a lot of people were saying, is like, oh my God, that two-man game between him and Giannis is going to be crazy dominant. And I think we all were thinking of this a little bit like NBA 2K, where it's like we're going to put these players together and then it's going to click immediately. But what we found with this team is that they needed a lot of reps. And on top of that, too, like you were talking about, like, what's this season been like? It feels like the Bucks have had like three or four different seasons within this one season. Because, I mean, we had the Adrian Griffin-led Bucks team, which offense, listen, they were putting up crazy numbers under Adrian Griffin, but the defense was terrible. It was poor under Griff. You made the coaching switch, and then under Doc, the record is poor, where you're like, okay, you're mediocre at best based on record alone. But when you're looking at it, it's like the defense got better, but the offense took a step back. And a lot of that has to do with Dame and him trying to find his place. When Doc Rivers came in, the first thing that he mentioned was, we need to try to find a way to make Dame comfortable, because I'm inheriting a team pretty much that doesn't really have an identity yet. So it's been a lot of trying to figure out how to get Dame as comfortable as he can in this offense, how to learn how to play with Giannis. And for Giannis, like, he had a career season for him, first NBA player in history to average at least 30 points, shooting at least 60% from the field, like an efficient, great year. But when it comes to that fit with him and Dame, it's been a little bit harder for Dame. And on top of that, it's just been an inconsistent shooting season for him as well, where we were hearing from Portland fans saying, just give him some time. Like, he starts off slow and then he heats up and then it's smooth sailing. But it hasn't necessarily been the case for Dame this year. You can point to the injuries that he's faced. He's had some nagging injuries throughout the season, the coaching changes, trying to switch, getting used to playing with a big three, with Giannis and with Chris, and then Chris having to, like, it's been a lot of moving pieces for Dame. But the hope is that, you know, he was finding his stride there at the end before he got hurt towards the end of the season as well. So the hope is that come playoff time, that this team will really be able to put some of the principles that they all know they should be doing into practice on a consistent basis. And that consistent piece is going to be the big piece for Dame.
That doesn't sound too convincing, to be honest.
Hey, it's real. I gotta be honest. We gotta be honest.
No, you gotta be. All right, Ben, on your side of things, you're muted, by the way, but on your side of things, Tyrese Haliburton, he's been the big name that's been talked about all year from Indiana, a career year, 20 points, 11 assists, led the league in assists. Talk about the beginning of the season for him, how he kind of took the NBA world by storm. You made it to the final of the in-season tournament and showed everybody that this Pacers team's identity is going to be, we're going to score a lot of points and we're going to push the pace a lot. So tell me about this new offensive, like, renaissance the Pacers have had, even though they have the same coach in Rick Carlisle, but Haliburton has been leading the charge.
Yeah, that's kind of how it was. And especially early season, the Pacers were putting up historic offensive numbers and still kind of are by the end of the season, led by Haliburton, who somewhat unexpectedly, I would say, took another leap from last year where he made his first All-Star game. And now it's like this guy is probably going to be second or third team All-NBA. He's phenomenal. Everything runs through him. His ability to push the pace in transition, his incredible vision, his off-dribble shooting. But his injury in like December, January was probably the main thing that we've been looking at with the Pacers over the last couple months. And it seems like he's finally getting back to his normal self, which is obviously perfect timing, right? But Haliburton has been excellent this season. Even in the games where he wasn't really putting up a ton of, points when he was recovering from the injury in like early March, late February, his passing always just warps defenses and creates great shots for the Pacers. And after the All-Star break, and especially with the Siakam trade, which has been phenomenal for the Pacers, I would say. I loved that trade at the time, and my only real issue with it, and my only real issue with it still, is whether or not they can retain him in the offseason. And I'd like to think that the Pacers wouldn't have made that trade if they didn't have some idea that they'd be able to retain him. But Siakam, as well as some other moves, playing Andrew Nembhard more, playing rookie Ben Shepherd more, has really made this defense a lot more palatable, which I think is kind of the biggest thing for me that's giving me encouragement going into the playoffs, where the Pacers were like historically terrible on defense through the beginning of the season. And since the All-Star break, they are 18th in defensive rating, which isn't great, but it is a big improvement. And that is just one spot behind the Milwaukee Bucks, who are 17th in defensive rating since the All-Star break as well. So the Pacers are not as horrible defensively as they once were. Of course, Siakam is a big help. Aaron Nesmith's had a phenomenal season on defense. And though I think Buddy Hield was a pretty significant loss for the offense, replacing him with a better defender certainly helps. And I do think Buddy's loss has impacted some of Haliburton's scoring numbers, since Buddy was like the primary off-ball shooter, off-ball mover, the guy who was like spacing and running off screens. And Haliburton's taken up some of that role just because nobody else on the roster can do it. He's the only guy. Obviously, he's the best on-ball creator, but he's also their best off-ball mover and off-ball scorer and shooter. So I don't necessarily think Haliburton's drop in counting stats reflect a dip in his play outside of the injury, which, of course, for that first couple month and a half when he was back, he clearly was not healthy. Like he didn't look explosive. He didn't look confident in his shot. But the Pacers, again, still have a top three offense in the league, despite focusing a little bit more on defense. And I definitely do have my worries about how that defense is going to hold up in a playoff setting, but I think we've shown enough. And obviously, Rick Carlisle is a phenomenal coach, and I trust him a ton. I think one thing the Pacers will certainly have, Bucks probably have the better overall roster and obviously the best player in the series, assuming Giannis is healthy. But I do think the coaching advantage for the Pacers is probably going to be significant. And I will say, as a fan of an Eastern Conference team, and Dime, I know you'll relate to this, is I was happy when the Bucks hired Doc Rivers. I was like, this is okay. And it's been up and down. So those are my
Wait.
thoughts.
First off, I want to say both of you guys started out with great answers. I knew a lot of the things both of you guys said, but it's nice to hear confirmation from people that follow the team every single game. You actually, Ben, you took a lot of my follow-up questions, but I'm still going to ask some clarifying stuff. But
Go for it.
you mentioned it. I was waiting to get there. But all of my subscribers probably listening to this, as Camille was talking about him, are probably like, "Oh my God, what is Dime going to say?" Because this, I am the president and CEO of the Glenn Rivers Hate Association. This guy, I'm 25 years old, but in actuality, I'm like 33 because of him. He is, and I just felt so bad. I don't mean to rain on your parade. I think you still have a chance. You have championship pedigree with Giannis, but I have zero faith that he can win a championship again. I do think coaching is exaggerated, though, in a certain way. I think people are so
Yeah,
quick to blame
I agree
coaches
with
for
that.
everything. And
Yeah.
I think even when Glenn Rivers' teams have disappointed, whether Philly or the Clippers, it's
I thought you just won't call him Doc.
I refuse. There's one Doc that we know in NBA circles, and he is went to the same college as me. So or I went to the same college as him. So the Glenn Rivers situation, I think most of the time when his teams have failed, it's been the players. But I just think he doesn't necessarily, you know, do positive things where you're like, man, this adjustment by him was the major change of the series, like stuff like that. I don't know how much he's going to help you win a series, but I still think it's going to come down to the players. So going back to Camille, I wanted to ask, the one thing that was super obvious about this Bucks team is you're losing Jrue Holiday, Grayson Allen. You're replacing them with Malik Beasley and Dame. So offensive rating last year, you were 12th and then fourth in defensive rating. Then this year, it's almost like it's flipped. Sixth in offensive rating, 19th in defense. So let me know how the adjustment has been. You talked about the change in philosophies with new coaches, but just the personnel-wise, going from Jrue and Grayson to Dame and Malik Beasley, who you can maybe confirm this for me or not, but every time I've watched Malik Beasley this season, he's played better defense than when he was with the Lakers, but I don't know how much that means, you know, relative to what you guys had. So,
yeah, I mean, on my show, Tech File, we have a Lakers fan, resident Lakers fan on our show. And I asked him about, like, what's up with Beasley? Like, why didn't y'all play him in the playoffs? And he was like, the defense wasn't there. The shooting was too streaky. We just couldn't do it. And I'm like, oh, okay. So when he comes to Milwaukee, the first thing you're hearing is like, we're going to put Beasley on the best perimeter player on the other team. And I was like, looking around, like, why is that what we're saying we're going to do? Like, understood that Jrue Holiday is gone, but Malik Beasley is really what you're telling me is going to be our best perimeter option. And lo and behold, like, truly amongst the guards, he was the best option, which just goes to show how much this team was really missing what Jrue Holiday brought. And not only Jrue Holiday, but under Mike Budenholzer, like, a lot of the guards had a defensive pedigree. So even coming off the bench, your George Hills, you know, your Jabon Carter, you got your bigger wings like a Wes Matthews. There were guys who were coming in the game who were known for their defense because that's what Bud stressed. And when you take out Jrue and you put in Dame and you take out Grayson Allen, who wasn't necessarily a great defender, average at best, I would say. He moved his feet. He got exploited in certain matchups, but a bit better than what Malik Beasley has. But to Beasley's credit, he has been putting in the effort this season where he's trying at least to stay in front of his defenders. Now, that's not always going to be successful, but the effort is there. And with that backcourt of Dame and Bees, which is probably why you saw towards the end of the season that Doc made the switch of saying, okay, we're putting Pat Bev in next to Dame rather than having Bees in. So that's a starting rotation that they had to do, just trying to help keep defenders in front of the guards, because the Bucks like that drop coverage with Brooke Lopez out there. And when you are having guards who are constantly getting beat at the point of attack, it makes your big look bad because he's being under attack from two different angles. Like, that was the luxury of a Jrue Holiday guard, because like, he's going to funnel the defender the way that they should be funneled, as well as try to give a rear contest, if not getting back in front of the defender. So that right there defensively has been the biggest change, I would say, because people look at Brooke Lopez's numbers too, and they're like, hey, what happened to Brooke? And it's like, it's not all on him. He's been put in some very difficult situations throughout the season. So it's been trying to figure that out. And then when you have Bobby Portis in the game as your big, it's a lot more trapping. So it's just trying to figure out what are the best coverages to try to make up for those guards. But I was here for Doc putting Pat Bev in the starting lineup to at least get that defensive edge. Although he's a smaller guy and he's older at this point, it's not like it's peak Pat Bev anymore, but it's a better option defensively than what you had before.
Well, I mean, I love that answer. And also, on the total opposite side of Glenn Rivers being very disliked here, Patrick Beverley is very liked here. I love him.
I see why.
He gave us some great memories. And I think the Lakers are legitimately the only fan base that didn't like him, because every other team that he's gone to really enjoys what he brings to the table. As you said, he's not the same, quite the same Pat Bev. But just some things that stood out for me looking at your roster on Basketball Reference is that Giannis and Dame both played over 70 games. Mm-hmm. Brooke Lopez and Malik Beasley, 79 games. And Bobby Portis, 82 games. So you have had some moving pieces in and out, but it's been, for the most part, your main players have been healthy, which is good to see. Ben, you talked about Siakam. I'm looking at his stats. Typical Siakam numbers, but the efficiency definitely stood out to me. 21 points, 8 boards, 4 assists on 55% shooting and 39 from 3. I mean, how big of a move is this? Are we talking first round exit was guaranteed before you got him, and now you got a chance to win a series? Or did you always think you could win a series before getting him? Because I didn't think so. I thought this was a first round exit team without him, but now I really think you got a chance. Because to me, Pascal is a second star. We've seen him in the biggest stage get it done. So Talk to me about Pascal, because he's gotten no media coverage since the move. It's like ridiculous.
It's the Pacer way. I think Pascal totally changes the calculus for this team. I agreed with you, especially before the trade. I just didn't believe in the defense. I think a lot of the adjustments that I think I credit Halliburton and the roster and Carlisle aren't just Siakam, but obviously Siakam has been a huge addition. Like you said, he's been phenomenal this year. This is his most efficient scoring season since 2019, when he won the title with the Raptors as like a second star, basically. Obviously, he wasn't scoring at the same volume, and he was probably just like a little worse of a player overall, but obviously that was a lot of years ago. And I don't think it's just the defense, because Siakam has been a really nice defensive addition. I don't think he's like an elite defender anymore, and he was extremely checked out early in the season with Toronto, which, you know, understandable. And then he locked in, and he's been pretty good. So he's solid on the ball against bigger handlers, and he can rotate and doesn't really protect the rim like he once did. But offensively, the versatility that he unlocks for the Pacers, especially given their creative scheme, where the Raptors run one of the most like boring and unimaginative offenses in the league, and the Pacers run one of the most creative and high octane offenses in the league. He loves to run in transition, push the pace, and he can do it as the handler or the runner. He's a great like pick and roll, pick and pop partner with Halliburton. Of course, when Halliburton's off the floor, he can initiate offense. And the Pacers didn't really have like a mid-post bucket getter like Siakam. Halliburton does his damage on pull-up threes and at the rim. That's where he thrives. And like the floaters in between game. But Siakam, while he can definitely shoot, he's a good spacer. He's obviously a great play finisher, but he's so good creating his own shot in the mid-range, in like that high post baseline area. And I think that's just like totally unlocked new options for the Pacers that I think are going to be kind of a disaster for other teams to try to guard it. And that's how it's been all season. And I think it's going to be really big in the Bucks series. I believe the Siakam Pacers haven't played the Doc Rivers Bucks. Like, all of the games were before those moves. And obviously the Pacers, you know, kind of owned the Bucks this season, aside from when Giannis scored like 65 or something, which, you know, when Giannis scores 65, Giannis scores.
Was that the game with the game ball situation?
Yeah. Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah,
I forgot about this.
One of the most ridiculous, unnecessary beats of the season that just does not matter. And like, both sides were like, this is not, like, come on. Like, but yeah, the Bucks obviously still kind of, just because of the roster, still play, especially with Brook on the floor, like a lot of their deep drop, because that's what Brook is comfortable with. But they definitely, as Camille said, without Drew, are not nearly as good when normally Drew could get over any screen and pressure the ball handler from behind and from the side. Whereas, you know, when you have even like older Pat Bev or Dame or Beasley or Connaughton or someone like that working over screens, it doesn't really work. The Bucks have always given up a ton of mid-range jumpers. That's kind of been like their thing over the last 7 or so years. But this year they aren't defending them well in terms of efficiency. Teams shoot 44.5% from mid against the Bucks, which is the fourth worst in the league, and the Pacers are the most efficient mid-range shooting team in the league. And I think a big part of that is what Siakam brings and how deadly he is working in that intermediate area. And that is one area of matchup advantage that I think the Pacers are hopefully going to be able to exploit, getting in that mid-range area, using screeners and motion and the lack of Drew Holiday to actually get their guards and their handlers free. And if Brook is sitting back in the paint, which he usually does, they can fire some mid ranges. But point being, I think Siakam is huge. I don't think he makes the Pacers like a legit contender. Like, they're not. They just aren't. But definitely makes them someone who could like threaten to make the Eastern Conference Finals if everything breaks right.
There we go. As far as Camille, I wanted to ask a major question, which was, how did you feel when Adrian Griffin got fired? Because you were what, 30-13 yep. with Adrian Griffin, 17-19 with Glenn. Obviously, as you said, defense trend in the right direction, but 30-13. I mean, that was shocking to me.
I get why it was so shocking if you look at record alone, but if you look at the way that the team was playing, like they were winning a lot of games on talent alone. Like they didn't really have an identity. They didn't really know what they were. Terrible transition defense, which is a reason why the Pacers were able to just get out and really run on the Bucks, because they were terrible in transition defense. Under Grip, it was a thing, like defensively, guys were confused. There was so much miscommunication. It was like Doc came in, he just had to clean up like low hanging fruit for this team, for them to look a bit better and to inspire some confidence. It's just the fact that this Bucks team was inconsistent. You mentioned the injury thing, and that's a good point. But the crazy thing about that is Doc's been here with 36 games now. He only had 7 full games with Giannis, Dame, and Chris playing together. That's it. Wow. Because of Chris's injury, where he had the 16 games that he missed, Giannis started missing games, Dame was missing games. So it's like most of their experience of playing together came under Adrian Griffin, which was a completely different style of play, because Doc came in and instituted some structure on how he wanted them to play and how he wants them to utilize that 2-man game and 3-man game between Giannis and Dame primarily, but also trying to get Chris involved on second side action. So that's the piece of it where like the injuries have come at an unfortunate time for the Bucks, because they've run out of time to figure out how they're going to play under Doc Rivers. And I get why they made the coaching switch, to the point where if you would have told me back in May of last year, after the Bucks fired Mike Budenholzer, like, hey, the coach that's going to lead your Milwaukee Bucks into the playoffs next season is going to be Doc Rivers, I would have said, why? We have Doc Rivers at home. Like, why are we doing this? Like, we don't need to do this. But after seeing the Adrian Griffin experience and seeing how players were also just kind of reacting to what he was saying, I mean, you saw on the sideline Giannis with the clipboard drawing up plays himself. Like, that's unusual to
see. Am I correct that like early in the season, because they were trying to do a bunch of like weird stuff with Brooke, and the players were like, just they play him to, and drop, please.
Yes, it was four games into the season,
one of like the in-season tournament games where like the first game after that, Brooke had like 10 blocks or something like that.
Wow. The first four, he was trying to play them like Toronto defensively, but this Bucks team is old and they're slow. Like, you're not, if you try to make the Bucks into a track meet, the Bucks are not going to win that. You have to slow the game down and be really physical. That's the Bucks game this season. And I just don't understand why Adrian Griffin really came in to try to tweak that piece of it before the player said, listen, can't do that. We need Brooke back and drop. Like, please do that. So it was shocking to me that they fired him, because they're already paying Mike Budenholzer, and now they're also paying Adrian Griffin in addition to paying Doc Rivers. But it shows the level of urgency that the Bucks feel around the championship winner that this team might have.
Let me ask you a yes or no question. Do you feel the Glenn Rivers Bucks are better equipped to go forward than the Adrian Griffin Bucks, despite the records?
This is going to sound crazy, but I do.
Okay. He has more playoff experience. That is, at the end of the day, he does have a championship, despite the fact that I discredit it left and right and say that Tom Thibodeau carried him to a ring on the sideline.
Hey, listen, I'm not trying to disparage Adrian Griffin. He a first time head coach, that's a tough situation to walk into, right? Where it's a team with very big expectations and the roster 100%. Was overturned right before training camp. So like, he had some things contending against him, but it just wasn't going to work.
Yeah, right. That definitely seemed like my read from an outsider, that even when they were winning, it didn't seem like it was really sustainable. And exactly. It seemed like Griffin was towards the center of those issues for sure.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask about a couple players before we get into the series prediction. But for you, Ben, you were talking about Aaron Nesmith. He's somebody that's really impressed me this season whenever I watched him. I mean, his defense, I always knew he was a solid defender, because I actually got to see him in Boston a little bit, because I was in college over there. At the time that he was at the Celtics and got this limited run. But what was impressive to me about him was that he shot 42% from three this year. I mean, talk about the young guys real quick. The Aaron Nesmith, how Obi Toppin has adjusted in his new role, and then Andrew Nembhard. You know, this is his second year from Gonzaga, and he's in the starting lineup now, correct?
Yep.
So, yeah, go ahead with those three.
So, yeah, I mean, Nembhard's taking over for Mathurin, who, I mean, look, among Pacers fans, probably one of the lower ones on Mathurin. But he definitely, you know, they lost his offensive juice. But Nembhard has slot in extremely well as, obviously, a much better defender.
Is he out for the season, by the way?
Huh?
Is he out for the season, by the way, Mathurin?
I believe so, yes.
Okay.
Nembhard is a really, really sturdy guard defender. Excellent in the passing lanes. really solid against screens. He's one of the most efficient mid-range shooters in the league. Like, really great, like, pick and roll pace, use the screen setup, get into the mid-range, make smart decisions. And it's just been a really nice addition, like, low maintenance player. Like, you don't have to feed him touches, and he can really do what you want him to do. Neesmith, man, the Pacers have been really, really great with these, like, reclamation projects. Neesmith obviously being the main one who, I mean, his whole thing coming out of college was that he was a crazy shooter. And though his shooting ability was definitely overstated by draft people coming out of college, he was a good shooting prospect. And I don't think the fact that he just, like, did not shoot the ball well at all in Boston was reflective of his ability. I mean, he's still not like a crazy shooter. He's shooting 42%, but the volume is relatively low, and he shoots a lot of open corner threes. But, like, that's his role. They don't need him to be like a crazy nuclear movement shooter or pull-up shooter. And he has consistently been the Pacers' best defender this year, no doubt. He is our only real wing stopper, because I don't think Siakam is really that anymore. Maybe he was at some point, but Neesmith is the player who the Pacers will throw on their, you know, best player, the opponent's best players, assuming, like, they're relatively similar size. You know, it's like, not like they won't put him on Jokic or whatever, but they will put him on guards and wings and even bigger forwards, because he's so strong, he's so balanced, he's so quick laterally, he's great changing directions and mirroring defenders, and he just, like, never stops running and moving. Like, his motor is incredible. He never stops running, and I think that's the most infectious thing about him. And he totally changes this Pacers defense, having a guy who can actually be, like, a legit stopper that otherwise this team just does not have. But speaking of other capable defensive role players, Ben Shepherd, who was their second round pick out of Belmont this last year, has stepped up in a big way as well, largely for his defensive energy. He's just been a really phenomenal off-ball defender, especially really smart rotations and great low man help, as well as being a solid on-ball guy, which is really good considering he was an offensive prospect in college. He was an awesome off-ball shooter and a really good driver. And the offense has, you know, been a bit of a struggle, as it tends to be for rookies, but his defense has been great. And the Pacers, with their role players, are very much, like, most of them are, like, really good on one side of the ball and really bad on the other side of the ball. Like, Neesmith is a decent offensive player, but, like, Jalen Smith, Obi Toppin, also good reclamation projects, pretty atrocious defensive players, but really great, like, utility offensive bigs. Smith is very, very efficient, really can space the floor. He has, like, absurd advanced efficiency numbers, like, that really don't make any sense. And then Obi Toppin, who not really a great defender, but is so good in transition, space the floor, put the ball on the floor, pass the ball, and is really a perfect fit with, like, the Halliburton-centric offense. And then, of course, there's TJ McConnell, who's never going to leave and is always going to be incredible.
Yeah,
it's like he's a thorn in the Bucks' side, TJ McConnell.
He's the thorn in everyone's side. I was at that Pacers-Clippers game where we throttled y'all, and every time TJ McConnell touched the ball, all the people in my section were like, not this guy again. This is like, that is the TJ McConnell experience. Like, he is just like an asshole to play against, and it's, yeah, you know, a really nice, like, TJ isn't incredible, but as your third point guard, like, that's pretty great.
Yeah. You mentioned Obi Toppin shooting 57% from the field this year and 40% from three, which impressed me. My last player I have to ask about, Camille, is Chris Middleton. I mean, everyone wonders about this guy. He's played 22 more games this season than last, and I thought he played pretty well against Miami last year, actually. But how do you feel about his health going into this season? Because it feels like he's always, like, an X factor kind of player. And when you get a good Chris Middleton, it makes such a huge difference.
Huge X factor. He is somebody who can be contentious to, like, Bucks fandom. Like, there is always a subsection of Bucks fans who's like, I don't get Chris Middleton, we should trade Chris Middleton, he's getting paid too much. Even after the championship year in which Giannis went down in the Eastern Conference Finals, and Chris Middleton was a main reason of carrying them to get through that Atlanta series. But since that point, like, the injuries have taken a toll on Chris, and he's had some unfortunate, just unlucky injuries. And then this season in particular, he started off the season in pretty good health, coming off of some offseason surgery. and the Bucks were being cautious with him in the sense of, okay, we're going to play him, but we're not going to play him his full minute load. We're going to ease into it. So he started the season off, you know, playing 20, 25 minutes a game. They sat him out second night of back-to-backs throughout the season just as general principle. Like, there's no reason to force it. And in the playoffs, there are no back-to-backs anyway. So they're like, Chris, you just take your time with that. And then the unfortunate injury happened to come against Phoenix in Phoenix, where he's taking a three. KD gets underneath his landing space and he sprains his ankle, and that ankle sprain kept him out for 16 games straight this season, which, again, as I mentioned, was during some very valuable team building time under Doc. So hey, listen, Chris Middleton is a true X factor for this team, especially if Giannis isn't going to go, because then it's really going to be on Chris and Dame to carry that offensive load for this team, because the Bucks are built as a top heavy team. It's Giannis, it's Dame, it's Chris. Those are your three offensive weapons. Those are your three guys who can actually create their own shots. Those are your three guys who can do some playmaking on this team. Outside of the three of them, the playmaking becomes scarce. Like, your next best playmaker is probably Pat Bev, really. So Chris Middleton is going to be huge. And when they're fully healthy, and it's Giannis and Dame, and the gravity the two of them have, like, it opens up so much for Chris Middleton as that third guy, that second side action, where it elevates his game because he is really, really good. I think he's a lot bigger than people realize, too. He loves operating out of the post. He can get the tough buckets. Defensively, he does not have the lateral quickness that he once had. The injuries have played a part in addition to getting older. But again, he's a bigger body you can throw out there on the court, being 6'8", 6'9", as a wing player. So he is somebody who's going to be of the utmost importance for this Bucks team, especially during those minutes when Dame's on the bench and you need someone to be in the game trying to continue the playmaking and getting guys into their right spots, because there's just not much shot creation on this Bucks team.
Yeah, definitely. So now we get into the series. In the regular season, the Pacers won the season series 4-1. Obviously, everybody remembers that semifinal, the in-season tournament, but a lot of that was pre-Siakam trade, pre-Glenn Rivers. Do you guys feel like those matchups hold much validity? I mean, what do you guys think of it?
Not really. I don't know. I don't really. Yeah, no. I don't think using like regular season head-to-head is really indicative of much. Like, I think you can learn stuff about like certain matchups and certain on-court, you know, kind of battles between certain players, but it's not like the Pacers won in the regular season, they're going to win in the playoffs. I guess that's not how it goes.
I totally agree. When it comes, I always say this, when it comes to regular season series before playoffs, people bring it up. I always say that, and especially in this era where we have a lot more resting and stuff like that, and there's so many injuries, I think it's even less relevant than it was in the past. And I'll never forget 2013, my Clippers swept Memphis in the regular season. I was a freshman in high school. I was so confident, pumping my chest out. They got no chance. And they beat us when the game slowed down. It just told me everything about playoff basketball versus regular season. So as far as this series, I think most people are going to have the Bucks as favorite, but we got to talk about the elephant in the room, Giannis. I mean, what do you think is going to happen, Camille? Is he going to be okay for game one, or what's the hope around the Cream City?
Listen, Giannis is somebody who over the years has shown that he can be Wolverine-like when it comes to his healing powers. I mentioned the finals year where in the Eastern Conference Finals, he severely hyperextends his knee, an injury that most people said for most other players, they would have probably been out for the rest of the playoffs. But he was like, I'm coming back for the finals and we're going to deal with it. And you saw the first two games where there are moments of him just being unsure. You can see him tweaking it, but he's playing through it. And he figured out a way to close it out, 50 points in that game, 6 finals, clinching victory. But I don't think it's fair of us, because we've seen him in the past being like, hey, he's able to come back so quickly. Like, we expect him to be ready for game one. Like, that feels unfair to put that on him. Like, he has to be ready for game one. It's a soft tissue injury. It's a calf injury. We saw what happened. It's not saying that these two are the same guys, but we saw what happened with KD a few years back where he had the calf injury. He came back. It turned into an Achilles. Like, Giannis has been gifted genetically with a body that most people will not have. Like, I read that he has one like the longest Achilles that a sports scientist has ever seen, where they're just like his body is crazy. But like, that being said, I think it's unfair to be like, he will be back game one because of what we've seen. Like, it might be a series where he misses the first game or two. We know Giannis is going to be pressing to play. Like, he is not going to want to sit. So if he does sit, it's the team and him being like, listen, we're looking long-term as well. Like, we have to get you right. Like, we saw him come back a couple years ago for the finals. Okay. But we also saw him come back last year with the back injury in that Heat series, where it's like, he just did not look like Giannis. So it's like, It's going to be hard to say, but I think it's safe to say, like, it's probably just better to err on the side of caution and say, like, you're not going to see Giannis in game one, game two, maybe game three, maybe. At this point, we're all, like, just guessing, but it just doesn't feel like a sure bet at this point to say Giannis is playing game one.
All right, Ben, given what she's saying, let's say Giannis doesn't play game one. What's your series prediction?
I feel like weirdly confident. I mean, it is partly because of the Giannis injury. The Pacers, you know, erasing Giannis from the equation, are pretty well equipped to match up with the Bucks in terms of play style, in terms of roster. Kind of opposite of what Camille said, the Pacers are like loaded up and down with players who can play, make, and create and get their own shot. And the defense has been a lot better. But obviously, Giannis is that huge X factor. The Pacers are a pretty weak team when it comes to rim protection, and Giannis is one of the greatest scorers at the rim in the history of basketball. I don't know. I'm just going to not be a coward and say Pacers in seven. I'm not going to be a coward. Whoa.
Winning a game seven in Milwaukee? That's big time.
Yeah, I don't know. Why not? my head, especially if Giannis is like fully good by game two or three, says the Bucks are going to win, but I don't know. I don't get to be a homer very often.
You got to. You think Miles Turner can cause any problems? We haven't really mentioned his name once, but can cause any problems in that pick and pop with Brooke always playing drop?
Absolutely. Miles is having maybe his best offensive season of his career. He's not the defender he used to be, just as he's, you know, aged as well. But this is for sure his best offensive year. And I thank Rick Carlisle dearly for allowing Miles to become the player that I always believed he could offensively. His versatility as a scorer from all over the floor, as a playmaker, as a dribbler. I think the Bucks are going to have to make some adjustment if Brook is unwilling to come out, because they're just going to spam pick and pops. That's what the Pacers do to teams. They just spam pick and pops, and they're like, you can adjust or you can just let us shoot them, and maybe we'll miss or maybe we won't.
Fair enough. All right, Camille, you guys, I mean, all the pressure's on you. What do you think the series is going to go, and how disappointing would it be if you don't win this series?
Listen, this has been a season where if the Bucks play out in the first round, I'll be like, ah, I could see how that happens. If the Bucks made it to the Eastern Conference Finals, and it's like, ah, I could see how that happened. Like, that's the range of outcomes for this Bucks team is really, really wide, because you've seen stretches where this team looks outstanding, especially against better competition. But then you've seen these stretches, like the one they just recently had, where they lost to Washington, then they lost to Memphis, then they lost to Toronto, and then they lost to the Knicks, which is like, okay, the Knicks, but like three of those games were at home, and the Bucks are solid at Fiserv form. So like, this is a team where if they flamed out in the first round, half the fan base would be like, knew this was coming. Like, I kid you not, like, I knew this was coming. But for myself, I think the Pacers is a matchup they can win. Now, having Giannis is a very big X factor. Like, Giannis averaged like 42 points against the Pacers this season because of that lack of rim protection that they have. But if the Bucks can actually lean on some of their size, they can actually use Brooke Lopez to play a little bit bigger, get those mismatches and exploit those. And also, this is why you trade for Damian Lillard, so that if something does happen, you have another superstar to lean on to try to carry the load. Now, Dame hasn't been necessarily great against the Pacers in the regular season, but what you are hoping on is, with it being the playoffs and things slowing down some, that it actually is an advantage for the Bucks, and that the Bucks defensive, or their transition defense, can keep up and that they can actually stay dedicated and stay disciplined on what they have to do. Like, you know, they want to get back, so you cannot spend time after shots go up reaching for the ball or taking gambles like that. You just have to get back. So I could see the Bucks winning it. I'm going to do it for the culture here in Milwaukee. I'm going to say Bucks in six.
Okay. That's pretty good. I think I'm going to go with Bucks in six as well. I'm really interested to see how Dame does, because we've never seen him in this role, really, like, as a true second guy. This is going to be this. I think there's going to be a lot of eyeballs on him. Like, people are going to be like, look, you had your roster in Portland. We saw what you could do. Obviously, you weren't going to be a number one on a championship team, but for the whole Dame Kyrie debates that have been had for so many years, and Kyrie being a top 75 guy and Dame not, and Kyrie has done that second option role as high as you can go, second option on a chip team, making all the big shots for Cleveland. So now Dame is in that role. I always used to say if Dame was in that role, he could get it done, but we will see. This might not be the same Dame. My last question is, if Giannis doesn't play, how big of an impact do you think Bobby Portis needs to make? Because I don't remember if it was a game against us or against the Lakers, but there was one game, I think it was against us.
Yeah,
he dropped like 40. Like, the guy still gets so hot, and the way the crowd responds to him is just, I haven't seen anything like it in Milwaukee. So,
yeah, Bobby is a legend. He's a legend in Milwaukee. Like, the way the crowd amps him up and the way he feeds off the crowd is like just like this circle of like energy between us and Bobby Portis. But that's one of the things without having Giannis. Like, Bobby has stepped up this season in games without Giannis. If I remember correctly, he was averaging like 22 points and 10 boards in games that Giannis did not play in. So, he is definitely going to be somebody where the Bucks are going to lean on. But we know that this Pacers Bucks, like, these two teams have some bad blood with each other from playing each other five times this series or the season. So it's going to be one of those things too, like, you got to play with an edge, but not go over it. So, like, the team that can also keep their composure is going to have the upper hand in this game, in the series.
Yeah. My thing I'm looking at is the pace, who controls the pace of the game. And then I think the Pacers will, my prediction is they'll start with Pascal guarding Giannis and Nembhard guarding Dame at the point of attack and have Nesmith on Middleton. That's just my prediction. I don't know if that'll be true. Then it'll probably switch 1 through 4. I'll be interested to see how Tyrese Halliburton gets attacked in this series. You know it's going to happen at some point. And they're going to probably do the same with Dame. Will. So it'll be really interesting to see how that goes. I'm pretty excited for this series. Obviously, I think it won't be super talked about in the media, but as a basketball lover, I'm obviously excited for every series, and this will be one. Guys, let the people know where they can find you. This was so great. You gave me every answer I needed. So I'm just as skeptical as the Bucks as I was coming into this.
As you should be. As you should be. If you want to follow me on social media, you can catch me on Twitter, Instagram, at Camille Monae, CamilleMonae. And as for the podcasting, every week, Technical File Podcast, TECKNICAL. We cover NBA, NFL, and pro wrestling on Technical File once a week. And then I do Locked On Bucks Monday through Friday for all your Milwaukee Bucks needs. And then I'm also part of the Pack-A-Day podcast family, every Friday dropping Green Bay Packer news. And during the Packer season, I have some more spots I'll be talking Packers. But yeah, that's where you can catch me.
You guys gotta go subscribe to everything she just said, because here on Dime Dropper, we love local content creators. That's what we gravitate towards. That's what we are. So we got to love that. Ben?
Yeah, first off, I'm a big Jordan Love guy. I adopted them as my NFC team for last year's playoffs since my Colts weren't in it. So I support the Packers. I enjoy their vibe. But you can follow me on Twitter at BJPF_ or just my name, Ben Pfeiffer, on YouTube or anywhere else. All of my basketball content, whether it's NBA or draft or whatever, is going to be on there. So
there we go. Show them all love. Give them a follow. Give them a subscribe. There can only be one. I'm going with the Bucks, though, even though I wish Glenn Rivers the absolute worst. Let us know your series prediction in the comments, Dime Dropper fam.